Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello, and welcome to the Caucasian Rich Brain Syndrome episode of Slate Money Succession. I'm Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of Fundrise.
Hello, hello.
Emily, we have made it to episode 3, and who better to talk about episode 3 of Succession than Matt Haber. Matt, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
We are very excited to have you. We're going to talk all about Caucasian Rich Brain Syndrome. You are a connoisseur of media satire and just about anything else related to media. Introduce yourself. Who are you?
I am the newsletter editor of Alta Magazine, and I also have a weird resume item, which is that I worked for News Corporation under James Murdoch. So I observed some of this stuff at a distance, but slightly up close.
How often were you in the room with James Murdoch?
Oh, probably 4 times. But Rupert did come to the office one time, and I literally hid in my cubicle in fear. And as he walked through the office, somebody whistled the Imperial Death March from Star Wars. Which was very brave. I'm sure that person was taken out and shot.
Just toss off the you boat.
So we have an actual insider, News Corp, with News Corp experience here to tell us how verisimilitudinous this is. It's all coming up on Slate Money Succession.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Matt, episode 3.
How's your headspace?
I was going to say the exact same thing. That was my
opening. Well,
how is
your opening. Headspace?
How is your headspace, Emily?
My headspace is pretty chill. I watched this episode more than once. The first time, I was like, this episode is everything to me. It is all life and drama, and Succession is back, baby. I watched it again. I was like, I think this episode isn't my favorite episode, and I have quibbles. And I might not even have a favorite line from this episode. So I'm excited to dive in. And
yeah, by the time we get to the end of the recap, you'll have a favorite line.
Oh, I hope so.
There were some good ones, I think.
Really? The pieces of this episode I really liked, the Tom breakdown, Tom being really drunk at home and pulling the pantyhose out of Mondale's tuchus.
And projecting all his feelings on the dog.
Projecting all his feelings on the dog. That was really moving. And then just sort of like the obscene specter of him trying to like squeeze some advantage out of going to prison with Logan, and his wife kind of like, if my husband said to me, like, I think I'm going to have to go to jail, I'd be like, oh, my God. Oh, no. Like, let's do everything we can to make sure you do not go to prison. But because it's Succession, Shiv was at first like, oh, no, honey, jail, that's bad. But by the end was like, well, if we can use this to our advantage, it's a good play with Logan. It was just sort of like an incredible journey that we went on.
It was also the
them.
First time Logan said thank you ever. He very coldly thanked Tom, like, thank you. Thanks for that idea.
Yes. Yes. He appreciates that.
I will bank this. For you know, cashing in this chip at a later time. And you're just giving me this chip for free. So thank you for that.
You didn't like the disruption? Their, like, version of Samantha Bee or The Daily Show?
Matt, tell me, did you like it?
It was a little overdetermined. But, you know, I'm really into that whole Harvard Lampoon comedy writer thing like Ken is. So I really dug it. I thought it was good jokes. Not too jokey jokes, but, you know, funny shit.
I mean, I think that calling Kendall Oedipussy is kind of genius.
He clearly likes it. And I mean, we have to dive into,
the Kendall self-loathing thing.
Yeah. And also, yeah. I think we're going to see Caucasian rich brain definitely trending on the day after the show, which is the affliction that the host diagnoses Kendall with.
This is what used to be known as mediocre white guy syndrome.
Yeah, I guess so. It's similar, but it's a little more woke. But, you know, Shiv has better lines just off the cuff than that comedy hostess had in the show. I mean, at one point she calls him half man, half Nobel Prize. Like, that's pretty good.
Emily has a question for me, which I couldn't answer, which Matt Haber being like the knower of all things. Did you notice the pin he was wearing at the CPJ dinner?
No, I didn't. I noticed the tracker ring on his finger for his like pulse rate and stuff.
Oh, he has like an Oura ring so that he can make sure that his resting heart rate is not going too high.
What do you think the pin was?
I don't know. It was like a button on his lapel and it was a person. I think it was an African-American person, but I don't know what it was, like who it was a picture of. But I would like to know. So
we'll have people to watch again.
Email
I noticed
us.
A good little Easter egg, which was that the White House aide appeared on the Mark Ravenhead show, the neo-Nazi. So he wasn't kicked off ATN.
No, because his dog wasn't named quite after Hitler's dog because it was spelled differently.
Right. The subtle difference between actual Nazi and Nazi adjacency. Yeah.
In the spelling. Yes.
Yeah.
So Mark Ravenhead is still employed by ATN.
Yeah. And Logan loved him. He said he's great.
Siobhan is the president of the company and is listening to people.
Domestic president.
And is paying specific attention to corporate responsibility.
We get it.
We hear for you.
It did feel like a little bit of a rehash of We Here For You, a refinement of it. And doesn't Hugo say he thinks it's really cool or something?
Right, and it's funky. I love Hugo. I think he is so unctuous. And he's like every comms person I've ever met at a tech company can like ooze all over you and spin you, but like has this kind of steely core of getting what he needs.
My favorite Hugo line at the very beginning of the episode, when he comes out with some full page ads that he thinks they should run in the newspaper, and he's like they have the headline, and then he goes we have a number of pledges, we can figure out the verbiage. like the pledges are just verbiage, right?
Yeah. That
what matters is that you're taking out an ad.
But I've actually been paying particular attention to Katerina. Because I feel like she's being stretched really thin. Like when they came off the tarmac in the last episode when Logan returned to the US, she looked really like distressed. And I wonder if she's going to be a character that emerges as having some kind of secret or story or something. Because she's in almost every scene with Logan, so she must know something.
That's true. And in the first episode of the season, when Kendall kicks her out of the car, before she gets kicked out of the car, and he's sort of asking her if she's with him or against him, she was like, why'd you have to do it like this, Ken? You know, which is something everyone kind of asks him. But the implication in my head was like, she would have gone along with him had he somehow figured out a more clever way of doing it.
But she may have a smoking gun of some kind, right? I mean, she's been privy to like every conversation.
She knows where the bodies are buried for sure.
Totally.
But also, it's not just Katerina and Greg. Like when they are talking to his face, every single person refuses to tell Kendall that he did a terrible thing, and that, except for Logan, who would quite happily like punch the kid. Everyone else, like, you know, for all that they're telling Logan, it's like, oh yeah, Kendall, he's terrible. Then they meet Kendall, and like, well, it's not that I'm against you. I think your heart is in the right place.
Roman brought him those cookies. Which was such a weird Roman gesture to bring a gift. Seems very unlike him to...
Wrapped up in a bow. Like, yeah. At least when Logan sent the donuts, they weren't wrapped up, so they didn't need to unwrap them. He knew that if he'd sent something wrapped, then, like, they would just sit there wrapped.
But no one tells Kendall... Like, no one wants to tell Kendall what's going on ever, but they do. I've noticed in this episode, when he's about to go on the show called Disruption, Sophie Owobi's show, and that poor beleaguered PR person has to show him this letter, this terrible letter that Shiv has released publicly about him. And he's like, well, it's a private letter. It's not like everyone can see it. And she's like, yeah, yeah. No, except everyone can. Everyone can see it.
Yeah.
And that's how everyone talks to him. They're like, yes, of course. Like, oh, yeah, you can go up to Waystar, to the offices, except Except you can't.
But isn't that how they talk to Logan, too? Like, they kind of, they never say no to him. They always are kind of appeasing him, even when they're trying to defy him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in this episode, I saw so many echoes of Logan's personality in Kendall. Like, he can't apologize also. He says at one point to Shiv, I may have thrown some ugly rocks. And she braces for an apology, and he doesn't give it. And, like, Logan never apologizes, ever. He's incapable. And we just see it.
But the difference with Logan is that people follow his orders, right? If Logan says something, like, they're all waiting. Like, when it is absolutely obvious that they need to let the FBI people into the building, they all just sit around there, standing in the room, waiting an uncomfortable number of beats for Logan to finally say, okay, fine, let them in, because they need that order. And, like, if Jerry says, sell that Israeli company, and Logan says, keep the Israeli company, it is absolutely certain that they will keep the Israeli company and not sell it. Like, he actually has, he's the only person in the show who actually has authority.
Yeah, that's right. Poor Jerry, right? Poor Jerry.
Visible
has no authority.
Yeah.
Complete powerlessness. And Logan obviously hates her now, right? Because he's scared that she'll somehow obtain some real amount of power, I guess.
And his cronies, too. Like, they refer to her as the puppet that became a real boy. You know,
yeah.
Like, she's, they're all turning on her. They all hate her.
And that's what he set her up for. I mean, he's said as much, I think, to Shiv in one scene. Like, he just has, his idea is that Jerry takes all the flack and becomes the fall woman up there on the glass cliff, I guess.
Yeah. I guess it's better her than Shiv for fans. But, I mean, people love Jerry, so.
I love Jerry.
You're just one of her slime puppies, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, she's great. One thing I wanted to talk about with you guys, and it's not integral to the plot of this episode, and that is the issue, this Naomi Pierce character and how useless she is as a character. All the other women, most of the other women in Succession, I think, have been like real characters and had some dimension, even the minor ones. Even the PR woman, I feel like I kind of have a relationship with Kendall's PR lady, whatever small relationship it is. She had a nice back and forth on the watch with Greg, whatever. You could see her struggling to, like, deal with Kendall. But Naomi Pierce, the girlfriend, she is just, like, a nothing. She's just, they've given her nothing to work with. And especially, it was so clear to me in this episode, right?
I feel like she was something when she was, like, getting high in the helicopter.
Exactly. Yes. That's what it makes it so disappointing.
And they never address her powerful family and their internal dynamics, which was kind of almost like a parallel to the Roys. They were the ones who owned, I don't know, the newspaper or whatever it was, or another cable network. And they just kind of, now she's just a kind of standalone damage, danger partner for him.
But, you know, there's like 7 more episodes to come.
Okay,
you
but I mean,
know.
She just seemed like she was very skeptical of Kendall. She called him like a lost little boy. But now in every scene she's with him, she's still like cheering him on, reading the good tweets and the bad tweets. And
she's almost goading him, like that scene at the gala where he says, should I give him something? And she's like, yeah, like she's almost there, like locking hands and jumping off the cliff together in a way.
She is the only person who seems to be unconditionally supportive of Kendall.
Right. And he said before, she's really good for me. Because no one, I guess, has ever loved him or something.
Well, I mean, I would love a little bit more on Rava because she's an interesting character, right? She married into this family. She had kids with him. What happened there? I mean, I guess the drugs and the instability, but she's a real person. Like, she felt very, like, human. What about her worked with the Roy family? How did that function?
I think that I was hoping last season we would see more of Marsha. I have a feeling that's going to be this season, that this season is going to be like the Marsha season. Maybe next season will be the Rava season, you know, coming back, or like the Naomi season. Who knows? Like,
Marsha is cold-blooded. I love how she has her lawyer with her all the time, like negotiating money for every hug and every hand.
And what's that line that Logan, when he's with Shiv and he's passing Marsha with her lawyer?
How you doing?
Love and marriage. I feel another million drained with every cluck from that hen house.
Exactly.
Good line. You see, there are good lines in this one.
Yeah, I guess
I like
so.
When Greg says, I don't have a patina. Because he was wearing the watch in the...
Which we have to talk about Greg's watch, okay? So Tom is like, fuck the watch. I will give you a watch. And instead, Greg is like, you know, well, Kendall said he'd set me up with a watch. And then he like hangs out with Kendall's watch guy. And he's like, this watch is, and then the whole ridiculous watch subplot, which goes on for like basically the entire episode. And then at the end, he buys it, right?
Yeah.
And it breaks.
I mean, one thing I realized is that like everybody in the show speaks in this very kind of baroque, dirty talk with like lots of references, except Greg. And he doesn't understand what anyone's saying ever. So when Kendall says, I'll hook you up with a watch, man, in Greg's brain, it's I'll buy you a watch. But like, I don't think that's what Kendall meant. And like, Greg is always, he doesn't speak the language of this world. All the characters speak in this dense referential way, you know, with like shorthand. Greg doesn't get it at all.
This is another episode where Greg is like the C plot, the C comic relief plot threaded throughout the episode to like lighten our hearts. Mostly.
It's a little fan service. They know people love Greg. They love the egg. So I think they like put this stuff in. And
but like this kid who, you know, is still like short of cash, who winds up spending $40,000 he doesn't have on a watch. And then he says, quote, why did I get it? You shrugged at me like it was me.
And I have to send it to Switzerland for 6 months of the year for maintenance.
It's like, well, totally. Like if like a pretty girl shrugs at him, that's going to make him spend $40,000 on a watch.
So Felix, you know more about luxury than I do. Is that a very expensive watch? Is that a moderately expensive watch?
I believe this would be like a...
Is it a starter watch?
A stainless steel bracelet kind of, you know... Entry level Rolex. It's a nice watch, but it's easy to spend a lot more if you want.
Why wouldn't Greg think that Kendall was going to hook him up? Because he hooked him up with that apartment, and he's basically subsidized his lifestyle. He's gotten him in the limo with the champagne and the hangers on. Like, why wouldn't Greg assume that his rich buddy was going to buy him a watch?
Yeah, and well, I mean, is Kendall buying watches for anyone else in that limo? I'm sure Naomi Pierce can afford her own watch.
That limo scene was depressing.
Let's talk about the limo scene and it's not the CPJ dinner, the CPWJ dinner, which is a very, very different thing.
So Kendall's headspace in this episode, we must dive into it, right? I mean, in the beginning, he's in the restaurant with the reporter eating his fennel salad and trying to frame the story. He's obsessed with the tweets, obsessed with the media coverage. He's trying to embrace the critical media coverage, and it's utterly unconvincing. Were you guys, why is he doing this? Why is he excited to be called Oedipussy?
I mean, he says at one point, like, this isn't backlash. I'm in the conversation. I think he finally feels like maybe he's stepping out of his father's shadow a little bit, but I mean, he's getting his ass kicked every time and he's being mocked.
I think this is also just like the standard Kendall self-loathing, right? I mean, he actually walks up to the writers and he says to them, hurt me, fucking hurt me. Like, right. Who says that, right? You need to be a very, well, like...
We're not TV psychiatrists, but I think we can diagnose him as a bit of a masochist, yeah.
And so, like, when he's, like, in the limo and he's like, hit me with the bad tweets. I love it when there's a bad tweet. And then someone says a tweet that's like a little bit close to the bone. And he's like, that's really bad. Or the first time he sees Shiv's letter and he's like, oh, this is good, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's trying to persuade himself that, well,
the bad tweet that makes him wince is the same as Shiv's letter, basically. I have it here. It says, he clearly has mental health issues coupled with addiction. That's all this is. And that's essentially what Shiv said. She added, I've seen him say things about women and I've seen him compare himself to heroes of history. But basically the same thing. This is an addiction and mental health crisis that we're all like watching unfold. And it hurts from his sister, but not so much from us, the tweeters.
He's trying to persuade himself that it's a good pain.
Is this an addiction and mental health crisis that we are watching unfold? Is that all Kendall's maneuvers?
It's definitely manic. And then I feel like that it pivoted when he got to the office of Waystar Royko and he got very paranoid about are they hacking his air conditioner? Did they lower it to 62 degrees? And I feel like he started getting really paranoid at that point. And there is that weird interaction with the security guard where the guy, when they're alone, leans into him and says, I know you.
This is like the thread of the season so far, right? Because Marcia suggested to Logan that they out Kendall for that. And Logan was like, once you know, I could go down also if that happens. And now Colin seems to be implying that could happen again. And it feels like right. they're not letting
because
that go.
That was like what happened in season two, was that Kendall was like this close to pulling the trigger and taking down his dad. And then his dad was like, you can't do that because I have this thing on you now. And somehow Kendall has kind of persuaded himself that has gone away and that he can forget about it. But if you think about the like internal chronology of the show, season two was not that long, right? We are still in the same proxy battle. We are still really very close to that Chappaquiddick moment. It's still, you know, it's still very much in the recent memory of Kendall. And he knows that, like, this is hanging over him, and he's doing this in this insanely reckless way that there's... how does he think? Does he think that he can pull this stunt and get away with it without that becoming public?
Well, if he goes down, Logan goes down, right? I mean, there's no, his father covered up a murder or a manslaughter. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a TV lawyer, in addition to not being a TV psychiatrist.
What? Yeah, I think that's right. I don't think Logan could emerge cleanly if that information came to light, especially since they both went together to visit the family's home and everything, knowing how he had actually died. Like, if that came out, that would be an incredible story.
Yeah, it really is like this kind of ticking time bomb in the background that you just wonder, like, when is it going to go off? Who is going to find out?
It has to go off, though, because Chekhov's gun, they keep hinting at it. This is the second time. It has to go off.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
By the end of the episode, there's a little twist, and it almost feels like we've been led to believe like Kendall's kind of imploding. He doesn't go on the show after all that, and he's like hiding in a corner, which is so on brand for him. He hides in bathtubs and in corners and with his knees up to his chin and stuff, and you're like, oh, it's bad. But then, of course, the raid. And so Kendall is, again, on top, like— There was a promo for Kara Swisher's Succession podcast, and they were like, each week, don't listen to it. Each week, they tell you who's up and who's down. And I was like, well, Kendall's down, and then maybe not. Maybe Logan's down this time.
But just because Logan's down, does that mean that Kendall is up?
Great question.
Yeah, I think that they're tied together. I think that if, especially with this murder thing, and there's that one, There's one point where Logan tells Shiv, like, you're not going to find a piece of paper with my name on it that you'll be ashamed of, which I thought she should shoot back, except for every screen and every paper you print for this network. But, like, there's got to be something connecting those Ken and Logan to Malfeasance. They're pulling each other down. They're, like, going to hurt each other.
This is, of course, like, the most obvious Murdoch reference in the show, when Logan is talking to Shiv and he goes, I don't read emails, I get the action points, which is a direct reference to both Rupert, but actually James Murdoch in the UK hacking scandal. And everyone's like, you got this email, and they're printing out the email, and it's like, you saw this in front of you. And James is like, yeah, I don't read emails.
There was another one too, where Tom tells the advertisers and the affiliates that they had to animate the ATN logo because it was burning in the screens of people's televisions because they watched it so much. And that's like a direct thing from Fox News. Apparently it was ruining people's plasma screens because it was burning in the logo.
Do executives really not read their emails? Or is that just something they say?
Well, I'm not an executive and I don't read mine.
You don't read your email? Felix does. You read some of them. You've responded.
I read some of them, but I am always woefully behind. And also, my email app can't seem to cope with the number of emails I have. And so, like, yeah, I'm in a major email
hole
right now.
Weird flex, but cool.
Okay.
It's strange to imagine Logan reading an email. It's really hard to imagine him devoting the time to, like, listen to some other person's words written on a screen to him. It just, I don't see it in his day, you know?
Yeah, emails are for proles, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has people to read his emails.
Right. So that's believable. Although it's not believable he didn't know about all the bad things happening on the cruise ships. He pretty much says so to Shiv after asking, do you trust me?
And yeah.
She crosses her arms, obviously does not trust him at all. And she's like, yeah, but what do you mean?
Right. I trust you, but right. that scene from the second episode where the siblings are in the room talking about Uncle Mo and how we always knew never to go in the pool with him, that was dark. I mean, basically, they were saying, like, our father employed and was close to an abuser and put us in proximity to that person. I mean, there's some dark, dark psychological stuff in this show. Really, like, bad family dynamics. I kept thinking about those Patrick Melrose novels, just like this wickedness running through generations of a family and harming each next generation.
Mm, yeah, that's a good parallel. The fact that Roman can't come up with a single childhood memory with his father.
Roman's so damaged. So damaged.
He's having that conversation with the friendly business reporter where the guy's like, well, I can't tell you what I'm going to ask. And then, of course, winds up telling him what he's going to ask. And the questions are, he has to prep him the most softball questions ever.
Very confident. Massive optimism.
Great. And then, I think that you know that there's this idea that everyone thought it'd be really kind of fun if after everything we might open up the door and some family stuff for a little bit. No, I know. And we won't dwell on it, so we'll just keep it loose and be fun to freewheel it. Hmm?
Tell me precisely every single word they're going to ask me.
Well, I couldn't disclose specific questions because of our policies at ATN Business, and that would be ethically, But it might be something like, Logan seems like a business-oriented guy. What's something special that you and your dad enjoy doing together?
No. Next question.
Okay, sure. What was the time that your dad came to your aid when you really needed him?
No, I'm not doing that one.
Right. What is your most cherished father-son memory?
So far, these are bad.
Well, how about you lead? Is there some sort of childhood story that you'd like to tell?
I got a memory in the old Bankiola. It's a fly fishing in Montana, if...
Sure.
That interests you.
Thank you, Mr. Roy.
He can't come up with a memory, a nice word, anything.
And the memory is a fake memory. He had that experience with Connor of fishing, and he says it's a single multi-use family memory that he could pull up. So it's like,
but also like before the town hall, and they're talking about the various questions that have been submitted for Siobhan.
The general tenor is, what the hell's happening here? A lot of those. Also. I'm embarrassed to say to my mother I work at Waystar. Any advice?
Yeah, fuck your mother.
Please tell us anything at all about what is happening.
And then eventually he turns around and he goes, can we get different questions, like less questiony questions?
That was one of my favorite lines. So let's talk about Kendall's punk rock moment at the board meeting, the big...
This bit had, like, you know, since everyone's, like, seems to be obsessed this season with, like, the degree of verisimilitude, like, the idea that Kendall can walk in there, air drop a shopping list to his, like, factotum, and the next thing you know, there's a bunch of, like, speakers surrounding the auditorium blasting out Nirvana's Rape Me. I'm saying that's not really something that would have been possible.
But I just love that Kendall, you know, 40-odd years old, is having, like, a adolescent flashback to listening to Nirvana and, like, really getting mad and getting back at his dad. And
so, I mean, but, like, this is – it really is Kendall, right? So is it, like, season one, episode one? Season one, episode two, where he's listening to, like, old school Beastie Boys, which, yeah, and now he's listening to Nirvana.
He's a 90s kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was a very well-chosen song, mostly because it in 2021, that song really does hit, like, hard. I don't think we realized, us olds, like, how hard-edged a lyric like Rape Me would be. And now, you know, post Me Too and everyone kind of thinking more sensitively about it.
I mean, I think Nirvana played it live, like, once.
It was controversial at the time.
Yeah.
But it definitely, I mean, you saw it basically broke Shiv. I mean, she was so poised and so put together, and her face just dropped.
She kept trying to talk. I was like, stop trying to talk, girl. It's over for you. Just get out of there. But she kept trying.
There was a little piece of me that
kind of felt that she got let off the hook, that like this prevented her from having to answer any questions, and that, you know, she then becomes like a sympathetic victim rather than like the evil face of Royster Waco.
Or Waco. That's true, Royster. But that led directly to her writing the letter, and which Khan called a Times New Roman firing squad. And like, I think she was so angry that she was like, I just have to, you know, I have to hit back harder.
Yeah, I mean, that in terms of like actual sort of intra-sibling violence, you know, they throw insults at each other, you know, every episode. But I can't think of anything in the, you know, two and a bit seasons of Succession so far, which is as public and as violent as we've seen twice in this one episode. The rape me stunt and then the press release are both just a massive escalation of what these siblings are willing to do to each other. And it's interesting that the axis of hate is Siobhan Kendall.
And that they know each other's pressure points so well, like siblings, you know, so they really know how to hurt. Like, I think Kendall knew that this was Siobhan's moment to step out in front of the spotlight and be the domestic president of Waystar Royco. And he destroyed that moment. And she knew that being publicly called out as mentally ill and having drug problem and Me Too issues would hurt him. And she did it because he wanted to be Mr. Woke now. Right. So she deflated that instantly.
But what's also fascinating is that Roman and Connor, given, you know, urged by Shiv to join in to pile on in this way, both are like, no fucking way. Like, this is just you. Like, we are not going to hurt Kendall like that.
Connor's
not
the publicly. Only human in that family. I mean, he's an idiot and he's an entitled jerk, but he's the only one with some humanity who says thank you and please and looks people in the eye. I mean, he's the least damaged, and he comes from a different mother.
Matt, you're talking about the guy who says, quote,
well, I don't want to be a bitch, but my signature is valuable real estate, and I'm not giving it away for free.
Okay. What do you want?
I would like some consideration. I would like some suck-suck on my dicky dick.
Oh.
Yeah, that's very human.
You know, let's not cast stones. He who has never said that. But you're right. He's a jerk, but he's not... He's not as deeply scarred as Roman, who, like, it can't even, if you insult him, he crumples up and disappears and then comes back even angrier. And, you know, Kendall, who has these wild ups and wild downs, and Shiv, who's just like hard as a diamond and hurts everybody that gets close to her. Connor's like kind of a doofy rich guy. You know, he's got Caucasian brain syndrome, but not so bad.
So when Roman refuses to sign the letter, this hurts him more than it hurts Connor, because he immediately then needs to face his dad, who knows that he refused to sign the letter, and Logan is very unhappy about this.
Yeah, what does he say? Keeping your nose clean.
Keeping your nose out. Yeah.
And then accuses his son of being gay because he said he loved him, right, in a TV interview. That's
Logan just... said, I love my daddy, which is like, like any parent would love to hear their adult children say they love him, which he didn't even say, frankly.
But... yeah, just deeply, deeply damaged. But I mean, the Shiv did what she did in this episode, yes, as revenge for the, I guess, for the rape me stunt, but also because her dad has been kind of goading her to do something the whole episode through, and trying to goad, I guess, Roman too, who didn't want to go for it. You know, they're mean to each other in private, but in public, I think it is a little bit of a little other thing, an escalation. Right.
Yeah, and Roman's still, Logan's still like dangling the CEO job to Shiv, right? I mean, she's sort of assuming that Jerry will flame out and that it will be her. So she's playing it every which way. I mean, they all are, but she's really three-dimensional chess all the way.
She's setting herself up for a Kendall, Shiv, in this season, it seems to me.
Although, you know, again, in terms of the great conceit of the show, the succession, like who will take over... In season one, you know, it was this troubled but incredibly important and incredibly valuable media company that, you know, there were takeover offers on the table, and like, you know, you would have power and influence and wealth and whatever you wanted. Like, at this point, you know, someone like Siobhan is like, oh, I dream of one day being CEO. And you're like, why on earth would you ever want to be CEO of that company?
Yeah, it's a distressed asset at this point. I mean, it's like, how many scandals? The FBI is kicking in the door and they're going to find something, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, we've already had the congressional hearings and the, you know, you can't make a Tom Lowe without breaking a few Gregs. Like, there's a lot has come out already. I mean, it's almost hard to imagine, like, in the wake of the Wall Street Journal story about the cruises and whatnot, that, like, what else is there even to find for the FBI?
Well, someone's going to jail, right? I mean,
looks like Tom. Is there any way that Tom doesn't go to jail?
I mean, I think we said in the last episode, like, these people never go to jail, actually.
But the thing with Tom is he's not a family member and he's a fake rich person, right? I mean, he loves talking about the help and how you shouldn't leave your pantyhose around. And he loves eating those little ortolan birds at the fancy people restaurant. But he's not a rich person. And at the end of the day, they can turn him into a not a real person and throw him into jail and not even think about it. Which Shiv would be sad for about 10 minutes and then she'd get back with that weaselly consultant for the Bernie Sanders character.
That was a nice callback at the dinner.
I love how one of the things that happens to that CPJ dinner is that there is no time in the year that you ever feel sort of both prouder to be a journalist and more like self-loathing at the fact that you don't do like a millionth of the amazing things that these like incredible honorees do. But also at the same time, there's all of these very expensive tables that are bought by many of them quite dubious media organizations, including News Corp and Fox News and stuff like that. And you get, you know, Robert Thompson or someone like that coming up and giving a speech and everyone applauds and is polite. And there's this kind of feeling that the media against evil governments out there in the world is a much bigger, more important fight than like any problem that domestic media might be contributing to the problem or a bad thing. And so it's a way for all journalists to feel good about themselves, even if they work for Waystar Royko, to the point at which you have that very short little scene that in this episode where Kendall goes up to stage and everyone applauds. And everyone's like, you know, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, here's lots of clapping for Kendall, who's like the most hated scion of much hated news org.
Who shut down that like renegade blog, the Gawker type blog, you know,
right.
Like he did that like 3 months ago, as far as the timeline goes on the show.
Yes, he was spit on. A lot of spitting on him, actually, now I'm thinking about it.
But the one bit that I think maybe rings a little bit false to me is the idea that Kendall would be the person going up on stage at the CPJ dinner. Like, it would always be like an actual officer of the company or journalist, you know.
But do you think that his people hooked that up? I mean, he has a whole like war room of people finessing his image and making him a poster boy for, you know, fighting the good fight. Maybe they got him in there.
Actually, this is in the weeds, but I believe that a Kendall type would definitely speak at that dinner, because the storyline about him at that point in the show is that he kind of is like fighting back. Fuck the patriarchy. Like, he's fighting against ATN. And I think media people love that kind of story. That's why I was thinking the Shep Smith storyline where he like quit Fox News and everyone was like, yeah, you know, like people get really into that kind of storyline. And I think they also like media scion types. I think the year I went most recently, it was like Steve Jobs's, what is her name? Laureen Jobs. Yeah, she spoke and she's not a journalist, but she owns them and stuff. So people like that.
What would you rather be, a journalist or someone who owns journalists?
I mean, they tend to do better long term, right? So
when Kendall shouts, fuck the patriarchy, I just kept thinking he meant to say, fuck the patriarch. You know, like, it's such a hollow thing for that dude to scream, any dude, really. But it's like, what did he really think he was saying? And what did he think it meant? Other than, you know, daddy, I'm angry at you.
Oh, yes.
I need to ask you guys, where did Kendall's entourage come from? And like, no one's had an entourage in this show until now.
I think they're from Doucheslandia. Where all the douches are from.
And Kendall in like a stretched limo. Like, I.
With champagne flowing. I mean, it was a real rock star fantasy, which was not his style.
Exactly. Like that, you know, there were definitely people who like to flash. You know, exactly. It's definitely not a Pierce thing, right? Naomi, on some level, had to be cringing inside, going, "Well, what the hell am I doing in a stretch limo with champagne? This is like obscene." Even Kendall likes to think of himself, on some level, as like, you know, keeping it real and listening to Beastie Boys and Nirvana,
and then throwing up gang signs outside of Sean George.
Exactly. and now you have him, you know, in a stretch limo, surrounded by like blondes and renting like a massive apartment at the top of 432 Park or something extremely high, and being very like conspicuous consumption all of a sudden. I'm like, whoa, that's interesting.
It's all part of him kind of like acting out, right? And just like losing his mind a little bit, and like in like thriving off of the press and the tweets and the attention, and maybe playing into the storyline.
Yeah, I think he's loving this moment in a really sick way. And yeah, it's a fantasy, right? Like, suddenly he is the most interesting person in the world, when before he was just some guy's kid.
True.
Yeah, I think he's going to hit hard. I think that we're flying high, right? Or we were flying high. I think that he's going to bottom out big time. It's going to be ugly, I think.
Is that the message of the show, that he was like thriving on the pain of the punches until he gets punched by Shiv in a way that is just such a hard punch that he winds up crumpled in a ball in front of a bunch of AV cabinets?
I don't know. I mean, he seemed pretty happy once he saw the FBI raiding his dad's office and everything. I feel like he's got some fight in him.
It was a confused look on his face. It was a little bit like the look that Logan got when first Kendall gave his press conference. It was a kind of like, now the real fight begins face, right? He was kind of wincing and smiling at the same time. And I think he's thriving on this. And on some level, I think he like literally wants his dad to die from this. He talked about bleeding him out, and can we stab him in a way that will kill him? And I think he's hoping that this is like, the pressure is going to mount and that this is going to end Logan.
Hello, I'm Imi Harper. On the Slow Newscast from Tortoise, I tell the story of how a Hong Kong billionaire was silenced.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer. And I got people fracturing me. I got this and that, but I'm safe.
And what it reveals about the freedoms Hong Kong no longer enjoys. Listen to Hong Kong's Rebel Billionaire on the Slow Newscast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.
I want to ask you guys about Tom, though, and like, you know, in terms of like weird, like internal cognitive disconnect, this bit where he goes, if prison is likely, could I find any benefit in that? And he's like, well, you know, it's like what I'm doing is like the going to prison is a sunk cost now. So I need to try and find the upside. And the upside is by like turning that into a part of the Logan Roy favor bank. What does this tell us about Tom and how he thinks?
Well, first of all, I wanted to add the possibility that Tom is playing this both ways, because we don't quite know. I mean, we saw him trying to call the lawyer for a consult. We don't quite know, like, what that's going to end up being all about, because Tom has more, like, I don't see, if I'm Tom, I'm not going to prison. I know a lot, and I'm willing, like, I personally, if I was in Tom's position, I would go to the FBI and try to get a deal and stay out of prison, right? I mean, that seems like the obvious thing he should do, while not
Except
letting on
has,
to his family
he
that that's what he's doing.
That he's using the Waystar Royko lawyer. Like, I feel it would be pretty hard for him to get, like, you can't be represented by two different counsel at the same time.
He's the one who requested the destruction of the documents, right? Like, he literally said, like, go to this place, put these documents on this bay. So he really does have blood on his hands for this one. I just think, like, the lesson here is don't marry a super rich person. I'm sorry. Like, it's like you become a servant to them, or you become, like, a toy for them. And he's just getting kicked around. I mean, he obviously has a very wishy-washy moral compass anyway, but he's just being, like, battered by every Roy that he encounters. When Kendall shows up at the office and runs right up to him and gives him that, like, you know, fake greeting, and he says, like, how's things going? He says, life goes on. He says, like, oh, you're a Buddhist now? Like, everyone hates Tom. He has, his one friend is Greg, and he's so mean to him.
Right. He's trying to put Greg in the shitty office.
Because Mondale is upset.
Poor Mondale.
The only thing we have yet to talk about for this episode 3 is Michelle Ann, who is the special assistant to the Raisin. And it's sort of, aka the president, and it's sort of implied that Logan, by kind of like going up there and pulling her aside and talking to her, has set in motion the seeds of his own demise, because he, like,
right, that's what Jerry says, right? Jerry's like, I think the deputy AG got spooked by you talking to Michelle Ann. Like, that move by Logan to come down onto the set and talk to her directly didn't work.
Bridge too far.
And threaten her and say, we can make the coverage of the president even harsher if you don't back off.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
I mean, he was basically, like, he was blackmailing her, right? In a way.
What I want is nothing. And then, of course, yeah, he wants a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, of course, there's things he wants.
But she also really stood up to him, which very few people do, right? She pushed back hard, and he kind of gave up a little bit.
He did. And the way that she pushed back is interesting. The way that she pushed back was basically saying, like, you are the owner and head of this company that is in the news in terrible ways, that is accused of murder and all manner of crimes, and the internet, like, Facebook is full of photographs of you and the president at CPAC and Davos, and the idea being that the electorate, and that, like, I guess the Raisin voters, Republicans, let's call them, would be put off by seeing, you know, photos of Trump with Murdoch if there was a Murdoch scandal. Which, would they?
I mean, if it involved rapes on a boat and murders and things like that, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, every time there's one of these scandals, the photos come out, right? Jeffrey Epstein pictured with Bill Gates. Jeffrey Epstein pictured with Bill Clinton. Rupert Murdoch pictured with Donald Trump. I think they get sent around. I don't know, probably doesn't move most Raisin type voters, but there's probably a few edge cases where it's just, like, not a good look for them, maybe when it comes to fundraising or publicity in general.
Right. It gets used in attack ads.
Yeah. It's not a good look.
But it's weird that, like, they put all that power in the Facebookers and the tweeters, you know, like, that the people at that level are actually worried about optics at the level of Facebook and Twitter is kind
Although
of weird.
That is also kind of your job if you're Michelle Ann. But then if you're worried about optics, why is Michelle Ann going on, like, the neo-Nazis TV show in the first place?
Right.
That's right. All blown over. That was months ago. We all forgot that you read Mein Kampf
seven episodes
two times.
Ago.
All right, Emily, has a favorite line managed to pop into your head, or not so much for this ep?
Oh, I guess this one, this one goes to Tom.
Gregory, my chief of staff, leggy princeling of ATN.
I like that. That was nice. He is the leggy princeling.
Matt?
I like when Shiv tries to get them to sign the letter and says, like, come on, it's accurate. And Connor says, accurate like Oswald was accurate.
Yeah.
That was good.
They were good. I liked her. Her line in the letter about grandiose and disordered thinking. I mean, that's a good line right there, you know?
And she did it herself. She didn't have a whole team writing it and rewriting it the way that Kendall does for everything he does.
Ironing out the verbiage.
She's the real him, as he said, or vice versa.
She doesn't have the team from BoJack writing good tweets. Right.
So Felix's favorite line.
It's not a good line, a quay line. It's not like a good line as in like quotable from you know, the thick of it or Veep or whatever. But at the end, when Logan says, shift the legals, he goes, cooperate, shift the legals. And I love this vision of his like, five different massive white shoe law firms all being like getting a phone call at the same time.
And the flying saying, like, monkeys.
You know, what's that wonderful UK press term? Reverse ferret. Again, like Logan is the only person who's really capable of doing that. Like he has the CEO experience of like, if you stop digging a hole, you just need to start moving as fast as you can in the opposite direction. And everyone else is just too indecisive.
I mean, he's the only like self-made person really on the show. He came from nothing and made this big company and earned his money and stuff. Like he must have had some acumen and to do that. And like obviously Kendall doesn't have that.
Kendall's got the corporate bullshit that we heard much of in episode two.
That is
and
correct.
He's got some lampoon writers helping him out.
And he's got some lampoon
jokey,
writers.
Not jokey jokes, funny shit.
Hey look, you can go far on cool tweets. I think we all know that here in this room.
I mean, that's how I landed on the show. So.
It's true. Everyone follow Matt Haber on Twitter because obviously. And Matt, yeah, thank you for being on.
Thank you both. I am a longtime listener. This is the first time. It's a real pleasure. Thank you both.
We will be back next week for episode 4 with Michael Mechanic, who wrote an entire book about rich folks. And we're going to go deep into like lifestyles of the very rich and interfamily tensions thereof. All coming up next week on Slate Money Succession.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.